Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Let's shift gears, no pun intended, to another subject that is headed our way. We're standing in the road and it's headed right for us, and that is the subject of self-driving vehicles. And you ask yourself, what in the world does self-driving vehicles have to do with finances? Well, we'll be sharing that, and I'm very glad to tell you we have Kathleen Burke on the line. Very excited to have Katie with us. She's a personal finance reporter for MarketWatch at Wall Street Journal. Website, marketwatch.com. A lot of great stuff there. We're always on that website. There's a lot of great reporters, a lot of great information, and Katie is one of them. And she's written a couple of recent articles that really caught our eye and we wanted to talk about. And it's the subject of self-driving cars and also auto industry predictions and how that affects your world and how you get around and how you live your life. And it does affect your finances, and we'll be getting to that. Katie is, as I said, with MarketWatch, and she has covered personal finance and the automotive industry, hence the overlap. And prior to joining MarketWatch, she was the managing editor at the Michigan Daily. So very glad and excited to welcome Katie to the program. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for taking some time out of your schedule. Now, are you in a self-driving car while we're doing this interview? Just kick back in the couch section of the car and chatting with me?
Oh, I don't think Manhattan is ready for those yet.
Okay. Well, is America ready? I mean, you know, as I was preparing for this discussion, I thought to myself, what will that world be like? You know, will people be using all that time that they don't have to necessarily pay attention to the car driving itself? Do we still need to pay attention? How quickly is this going to come? What will we do with our time? Will, you know, it be like a lot of technology where technology enters and it allows us to then not necessarily work less, but here we are again, working more because technology is enabling us to work more.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the interesting thing about all this technology is that there's still a lot of consumer mistrust. The University of Michigan did a study, and about 49% of drivers don't want any self-driving technology at all in
really?
Their vehicles. Yeah.
Wow.
And of those that do, about 95% want a way to override the technology and be able to take control if anything happens, which is understandable.
Hold on, Katie. Beth does a soundboard here. She's pointing at me while you're saying that. Okay, so I'm not sure, but she beat me to it. I was going to confess to you. You know, I have a big SUV, and it's relatively new, and it thinks it's smarter than I am, because I go to change lanes, and it starts the seat vibrates, and it tries to turn the wheel back, and I'm like, wait a minute, and then I say, oh yeah, that's right, I didn't put on my turn signal, so it thought I was doing a lane departure that I'd fallen asleep or something.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that can be distracting if you're not used to it.
Well, and it's funny because I'm like, okay, well, I don't want it to do that, so I, of course, can push the button and turn it off. Not that I have control issues, but, you know, just that I'm like, okay, I get it. But then, you know what, the truth is, other times I have found, I'm like, you know what, that was good. Yeah, that was convenient, and, I mean, it'll even slam on brakes if it thinks I'm going to back into something.
Yeah, and that's kind of what automakers and other transportation experts expect to see with this gradual acceptance of this technology. I mean, as people see the safety merit of these cars and compare them with, I mean, 2015 was the year of the highest car crash fatalities. Self-driving cars don't drink.
Right.
They
That's
don't
right.
make poor decisions. So as soon as that's accepted and they're proven to be safer than humans, there'll be more widespread acceptance.
What about the implications of, there's so many things to go here, because the next thought I have is, okay, there is the liability of letting the car drive. There's all kinds of, going to be a shakeup in the insurance industry. There's going to be concerns about viruses and hacking and technology. And I already am concerned about that a little bit because of just that I know that, you know, the OnStar can remote unlock my car or stop it or start it. Who's to say, you know, that these things don't become the subject of another, you know, I don't know if it's a 9/11 type attack where they try to shut down every car in the United States, or, you know, there's so many implications.
Yeah, this technology touches a lot of different areas of life. And, I mean, regulation is going to be a major aspect of this, and could be something that ultimately slows down the progression. Because if there aren't set rules about A, the technology itself, and B, what automakers can do with all this information that's now available to them, they can't just start rolling out on the road.
Yeah, yeah. And so I know that we're still, this is all still, no pun intended, or maybe the pun is intended, this is all still way down the road, but one of your articles, you talked about there being a projection for 2035, what, some 21 million cars on the road that are self-driving?
Well, actually, by 2035, there will have been 79 million,
Whoa.
And then in 2035 alone, it will be 21 million, which is a huge adjustment from previous estimates.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And so the financial implications, I mean, this will shake up the financial, the automotive industry for sure. There's going to be winners and losers, right? With every new technology that's introduced, there's winners and losers. Who's on the right side of it?
Well, it seems at this point, the automakers who are creating or who are producing the popular trucks and SUVs will probably have the upper hand, because those cars will still be necessary for farmers, for construction workers, just because they are so utilitarian.
Right.
But, I mean, if you're a passenger car maker, those cars can easily be replaced by self-driving cars or these ride-hailing services. Those are pretty easy for consumers to give up.
Okay. So there's going to be, like there are with a lot of things with automotive manufacturing, there's going to be the tailoring of the technology, and this just being one more to the particular use or the target market. So, for example, you know, somebody that would be looking for more of a sedate or sedan, vehicle, and maybe where there's, you know, I don't know, whatever need that person may have versus the person that, for example, wants to have the, you know, the little sports car with 500 horsepower, they're not going to want that, you know, that sports car to be self-driving. Kind of defeats the purpose, right?
Yeah. I mean, people are still going to want the joy of driving. I mean, that's something you can't replace with a robot.
right.
But yeah, and especially, and I mean, pickup trucks are a huge profit margin, and they're an incredibly popular vehicle. So no one expects those to go away anytime soon, even if the majority of car fleets end up transitioning into self-driving.
Right. Okay. Well, let's grab a break. We'll come back and talk more. I really am curious about some of the implications as it relates to fleet driving, truckers. And then also, of course, with some of these different services, the Uber and Lyft and all of that. So stay right there. We'll come right back with Katie Burke, our guest from MarketWatch, a personal finance reporter. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
The Rice and Rose Law Firm is celebrating 30 years of service in Volusia and Flagler counties. I'm Paul Rice, and I'm board certified in divorce and family law. I focus on representing divorcing spouses over the age of 50. For those previously divorced individuals who desire to marry again but want to avoid the expense and acrimony of another contested divorce, I specialize in drafting prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. You can contact me in our Daytona Beach office at 257-1222 or visit my website at ricerosenlaw.com.
Are you looking for a trustworthy local advisor for your investment and retirement planning, but you're not sure how or where to begin? Start by looking for a certified financial planner practitioner. Visit www.cfp.net to search for an advisor in your local area who's earned this highly regarded professional certification. Pick 3 CFP practitioners. Set an appointment and interview them. Ask questions. Listen carefully to their answers. Check references and research their firms with the Better Business Bureau. This PSA is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back. Katie Burke on the line with us, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch over at the Wall Street Journal, marketwatch.com. Glad to have her with us. She's written some great articles recently. They were like, hey, that's a great topic. And we'll sound very current on what's happening in the world by talking about some of this technology that is affecting the automotive industry, which, of course, will affect your finances. And one of the interesting aspects to this that I know that you've written about, Katie, and I think that is a really important question, and that is how all of this is going to collide, sorry for all the analogies and little cute comments here, but how this is going to collide with the car hailing services that are the alternative to taxi now, is the Ubers and Lyfts and these things like that. How does all that play out? And before you answer that, you know, I'll confess I'm a little bit of a dinosaur and a little slow on this to start embracing some of those new services. I've never Ubered or Lyfted or any of that. I've just, you know, when I'm in a city, I just do the old fashioned thing and try to get a cab. So, you know, how's all that work? And then how does all this new stuff affect it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the initial kind of obstacle of just the transition in general of self-driving technology is, and we have 250 million human operated cars on the road right now. And owners are holding on to their cars for the longest amount of time in history, like more than 11 years on average. So kind of introducing that change will definitely be gradual, and the cars will have to learn how to get along, whether it's a human behind the wheel or no one behind the wheel.
Yeah.
I mean, as kind of Uber and Lyft and these technologies become more commonplace, I mean, they've adapted well to urban areas, and now they're spreading into more suburban areas. They are kind of seen as the first adopters for self-driving technology, especially with the amount of efficiency that they could potentially create. I mean, the Deutsche Bank came out with an estimate of a self-driving Uber would make about 86 times the amount of a regular yellow cab with a human behind the wheel working 8 hours.
Wow. And no overtime pay or anything. Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah. So there's definitely going to be some changes as all that trickles its way through. And so part of this really is thinking ahead about where all of this is going to lead as it relates to not only the automotive industry, but the related companies and services. And it's not that the automotive industry is sitting back waiting on other people to develop or kind of, you know, waiting to see what happens. You had some major purchases and some collaborations that have been involved here. General Motors, didn't they buy one of the self-driving technology companies?
Yes. Yeah, so they acquired Cruise Automation, and then they also made a $500 million investment in Lyft. So the combination of self-driving technology and ride hailing has kind of been the target for these big automakers and kind of the way that they're making their entree into these new technologies.
Okay. So it is something that we're seeing they're starting to pull together. And then is there also, of course, with the gigantic elephant in the room, the big technology companies, Apple and Google, what are we seeing them do in this area?
Yeah, so they have been Apple in particular has been very tight-lipped about what exactly they're working on in the automotive space. But Google has partnered with Fiat Chrysler. They're working on self-driving Pacificas, so they've kind of been more open about their automotive technology. So, I mean, it's a very competitive space, and the intersection of the automotive industry based in Detroit that's been around for over a century, and Silicon Valley, and all these upstarts, and all the kind of crazy things they're working on. I mean, Bloomberg Business Week came out with a report about flying car developments. I mean, they're really, really pushing the envelope when it comes to transportation. So it's going to be an interesting intersection. They're kind of working as frenemies now, forming partnerships, but they're also competitors.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see in the next 5-10 years where those relationships go.
Absolutely. You know, so it sounds like Apple's one of the most tightly-lipped company about what they're doing. Do you think that they're trying to develop and go further than everybody else is with all of what you just described? Are they, for example, and again, I'm just speculating, I have no insight into this, but are they trying to make, kind of a 2 or 3 step forward leap, paradigm leap, to where they might combine some of the, you know, flying aspects, like, you know, taking the drone concept or a flying vehicle of some sort and going all the way to self-driving, to where you just skip the whole part of self-driving in a car and you jump all the way over to self-driving, pick me up and take me where I want to go in a flying vehicle of some sort?
I mean, it's anyone's guess at this point.
Okay.
But, I mean, you can develop the technology as much as you want, and they could in theory, create the self-driving, flying car, but there are so many other obstacles that come with that. I mean, scaling up and being able to mass produce something like that, I mean, they would probably have to partner up with a big automaker or just make a really huge investment. And then the regulations, I mean, airspace, everything else that comes along with it. So, I mean, they can develop whatever they want in secret, but eventually they're going to have to come out and kind of work with people on what they want to see on the roads in the next 10, 20, 50 years.
Absolutely. Well, and I know that's a bit of a stretch and very hypothetical, but, you know, Apple always seems to me that they want to develop their own things and they want to be, you know, kind of the shockwave. And so I wouldn't put it past them to try to, you know, do something like that. But it'll be interesting to see what the next development is there. And there's so much happening with all of this that it definitely could just, again, just be a major shift. And that really brings me to the next point, which is another article you wrote about the auto industry changing. You know, GM, General Motors president, you've got a quote where you're saying that the president of GM, what is her name again?
Dan Amon is the president.
Okay. And so predicting that we're going to have more change in the next 5 years than we did in the last 50. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement.
I know. And I mean, at the rate these technologies are being developed, I mean, it's not really a surprise. I mean, Google's testing their self-driving cars out in Mountain View. And people are getting excited watching them. I mean, they may not be ready to drive them, but people are definitely interested to watch. And I mean, Tesla's kind of, it's starting to prove itself. I mean, it still needs to, again, jump the hurdle of mass production. But people seem to be welcoming them with open arms. I mean, the auto industry, as we've known it for the past century, is going to look a lot different.
Well, and that you know, is going to be different also with the different generations, right? I mean, we've got every generation of younger people, of course, are born into and have access to the latest technology at an earlier age. And, you know, and I see with my own children and, everybody sees this. So they will grow up, the next generation, in a world where we have much more of this. And, you know, that also will, I think, accelerate the adoption and acceptance.
Yeah, and I mean, it'll be funny, and things like getting your license and practicing driving with mom and dad. I mean, those things are going to look really different.
Yep, you'll be practicing with the robot telling you how to do this and that. And, you know, the thing that I think everybody, one of the biggest challenges I think that people are going to have to overcome, or this industry and these changes, will be about overcoming this whole idea of, you know, there being some sort of artificial intelligence or something out there that somehow is like a modern day big brother. And, is it going to regulate all speeds? And, you know, I mean, there's so many things that are going to, the loss of independent and individual control.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a huge topic of discussion. I mean, and it hasn't been out there a ton when people are talking about these technologies. And I don't think a plan of action has really been figured out. But there definitely are going to have to be some sort of very publicized regulations in place to make people feel comfortable getting in these cars. And I mean, especially if it's going to be self-driving, there will be other features as well for entertainment, and you can email, you can call, you can do everything from the car. So, I mean, there's a lot of information that can come out of these vehicles.
I mean, I can hear the ad campaign against self-driving cars, Sammy Hagar ripping out, "I can't drive 55. And I'm not going to have the computer tell me I can't. Good stuff. If you're just joining us, Katie Burke is our guest, personal finance reporter from MarketWatch at Wall Street Journal. MarketWatch.com is a website. We're going to grab a break, come back. I want to talk about another really important subject with Katie, and that is this next generation, the millennials, and their impact also on the financial world. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Having a place to go after school will make you a better student. Having an outlet to express yourself will make you a better artist. Having something to do together will make you a better family. At The Y, we're helping build better friends, listeners, writers, swimmers, scientists, and musicians, one chance at a time. Get the gift of opportunity. Support The Y.
For more information on what your Y does and how you can help, visit vfymca.org/give.
The Y, for a better us.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Drake. My staff and I have enjoyed delivering excellent, lasting dental care to countless patients for many years. We are a modern dental practice offering a full range of services, including cosmetic, implant, Invisalign, and general dentistry. Additionally, I am one of only a few dentists licensed to perform IV sedation, sleep dentistry to help those of you who are anxious. My belief and commitment is to deliver outstanding dental care and positive patient experiences. We look forward to serving you. If you have a dental question or concern, don't hesitate to call us at 386-673-1611 or visit AtlanticDentists.com.
Hi, this is David Holland. I've been going to Dr. Drake's office for over 20 years. I trust them, and you can too.
Hi, this is Mike Peerless, NMLS number 1073735, Reverse Mortgage Director for Holland Mortgage Services, a subsidiary of Holland Financial. It used to be that people considered a reverse mortgage as a loan of last resort. In fact, our company's founder and host of this program, David Holland, was a skeptic himself. However, after many client requests, David investigated this product thoroughly and decided that a reverse mortgage could fit into one's overall financial plan. Holland Mortgage Services is a licensed Florida broker, and we can help you refinance your existing mortgage and stop making ongoing monthly mortgage payments. However, you're still responsible for payment of property taxes, homeowners insurance, and HOA fees. You can also tap your home's equity to pay off credit cards or put cash in the bank. Call 386-671-7526 today for a free evaluation. Sometimes, to move forward, you need to go reverse. That number again is 386-671-7526. Holland Mortgage Services, NMLS number 1432962.
And we're back. Katie Burke on the line, personal finance reporter for Market Watches over at the Wall Street Journal, marketwatch.com. Another great article that Katie wrote talked about the millennials, and hey, they do care about money. And there's proof, right, Katie? I mean, how many was it that applied to Goldman Sachs for positions?
More than 250,000.
Wow. Now, for those people that are not familiar with all these demographic nicknames, millennials and Ys and Xs and boomers, and the millennials are which group?
They're around the age group between 18 and 34.
Okay. All right. So they are, that's the next wave, and they are, aren't they now the largest demographic?
Yes, they are.
Wow.
And, yep, they're taking over the workforce. Well, I'm a millennial as well, so I guess we.
I'm getting a little nervous.
Yeah, you got to watch out, David.
Yeah, watch out. Yeah. So, no, that's interesting because, of course, all the focus, of course, as you very well know, has been on baby boomer, baby boomer, baby boomer, and now the oldest baby boomers are hitting 70. And now, so then the next big one is the millennial, and they are going to have an impact on the country, on society, just as the baby boomers had their major impact on everything they've touched. So they do care about money, and I think that your example is an excellent one, that 250,000 of them applied to work at Goldman Sachs. And so what are the implications? This is kind of broad brush, but what are some of the implications about millennials and how they buy, they act, they perceive the world, how they choose to buy things, how they, the kind of jobs, the kind of work experiences they're looking for? I guess, are there some things that are notably different about them?
Sure. Well, I mean, we are the generation that kind of grew up watching the 2008 financial crisis. So, I mean, that's kind of, it's been in the back of this generation's mind as it enters the workforce. So, I mean, especially as things like rent and home prices, I mean, those become more expensive, and millennials are entering the kind of family-forming age. I mean, money is always at the forefront of every decision this generation makes.
Hmm. Are they more, because of that experience, are they more inclined to save and be prudent, or is that too much of a generalization?
Yeah, well, actually, we've had a couple articles about that, and millennials turn out to be better savers than people expect. And again, I mean, it comes from this kind of memory of the financial crisis and how bad that, or how hard that hit some families.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting acquainted with millennials because I have some that work for me now, and so it is definitely it's interesting. They're I'm not gonna say, hey, they're different. Everybody's different, but it's definitely you know, different and in terms of their experiences as you just described. And we all, of course, are shaped by our life experiences. And we, you know, anybody listening to this program can think back to major events and major things that have shaped and affected them. And often I talk about that with my clients. And where were you when this happened? And when we're talking about the uncertainties of the market, hey, it's always been uncertain. It's just your frame of reference.
Right.
Yeah. So in terms of their impact on finances then, so at this point, they are certainly tuned into finances, and they are in the stage of life where a lot of them, based on that 18 to 34, a lot of them are, you know, coming into the workforce. They are affecting that wave is affecting their being available for employment. They're also renting, and they're buying maybe their first home.
Yeah. And then having children and kind of going through all the high expense life stages.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for it to get less expensive. it's still expensive. No, things cost. And their attention is definitely on savings. And so then that means that they are, as you said, with, you know, obviously using their interest in working for a Goldman Sachs as an example, they're definitely tuned into the finances. So they're saving, they're putting money into their 401ks, they're also, again, tying back to our original subject of technology, they're also, you know, leveraging technology and their purchase experiences. They probably do more online than maybe somebody that is in a different generation.
Yeah, and I mean, they're, as is kind of demonstrated by the number of applications to these big banks, I mean, they're going after these high-paying jobs for that security. And another trend that's happening is millennial job seekers are applying to more jobs at once than kind of in the past. It's kind of like the college application mm-hmm. trend of applying to 11, 12 schools. I mean, now are applying to 11, 12 jobs. Really hedging your bets, going for safer than sorry, even if mm-hmm. it's a job that's not your dream job, it's still a job that pays the bills. And we're kind of seeing that in this job application trend.
That makes sense. Well, it'll be interesting to follow how this develops. If you just joined us, Katie Burke has been our guest, personal finance reporter for MarketWatch at the Wall Street Journal, marketwatch.com. And go straight there and check out all of these great articles and especially Katie's work, and be tuned in to some of these latest things that are happening. Katie, I thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.